Okay, we had largely covered up to this point in time just a real brief overview of the beginnings, Joseph Smith and his finding of the most people like I'm a Mormon. His finding of the golden plates and his various visions that he had. And that's sort of an overview. When we talk about the Book of Mormon, we'll rehash some of that, maybe a little more information about it. Let you see what's going on in the background. Lest you be worried, I do want to tell you that we think we're a little behind in our schedule. We're right on schedule, which means we're a class behind, which is kind of about the way I do it. So, you know, hopefully we'll make up that if we go through the rest of the class this quarter. We left off with Joseph having translated, or actually having God translate, the way they would describe it, the Book of Mormon. It's 1830. He's finishing up the last bit of that. It will be considered complete in 1830 as far as the translation goes. He then does away with the plate. Well, again, there's a number of convenient things about this religion. That happens to be one of them. The plates are no longer available to anybody. As he was translating in 1829, Oliver Cowdery and Smith went out into the woods. And while they were out in the woods, lo and behold, John the Baptist showed up. And John the Baptist lays his hands on them and ordains them with priesthood of Aaron. And then Joseph later would say that Peter, James, and John came to him, appeared to him somewhere in the, actually it was an early, I say later, it was actually probably an earlier period after the, this event with Calvary, that these three showed up and they gave him the power of laying on hands for the gift of the Holy Spirit. And in doing so, called this the Melchizedek priesthood. So in the Mormon church, there are two priesthoods. Okay? And we will talk about those when we talk about organization. We don't need to get into that right now, other than what I've just said. We will go into more detail. I will say this. Priesthood is extremely important to a Mormon. So you have to be in the priesthood if you expect to ever achieve the exalted state that they talk about. Later on, in the same year, they would end up actually starting organizing this Mormon church. And they called it the Church of Jesus Christ, and they started out, and it would take on a different name for the years. And we'll may get to that. I doubt it seriously until we get to the next section. Smith denied polygamy, he practiced polygamy for a long time. And yet he ended up having, and you can count them, 34 wives. Now I'll tell you, he had a lot. There may have been less than 34. There wouldn't be many less than 34 over the course of time. And we'll see how he was dishonest about this in due course. You'll also notice, I'll draw your attention to the fact that he had, you count them, 17 of them, up through August of 1842. That's one point. Second point, when it says husband over there, by and large, these men shared a wife. That's what that means. Okay? Be aware. And we're going to look at, we got a whole section on prophecies, and so we'll talk about his prophecies later.
Paul?
Yes.
On these wives, do you know, at least in your study, are there any public records?
Yes.
That document this?
Yeah, not to document the, there aren't public records like, courthouse records.
Courthouse records.
You won't find in this, in the state of Utah, the government sanctioning, not these, sanctioning these marriages. I can't speak to whether or not that's true. I'd have to go look to see if they do go in and get a license. I think they probably have to get a license now if they're a state. But part of this becoming a state was you weren't allowed to have practice polygamy. So, once you became a state, you could go get a license, and you would only have one license. The little groups that spun off to continue, they continue today to practice polygamy. I don't think they get licenses at all. They're married. In our definition, in what I believe that definition of marriage is out of the Bible, but they don't have the sanction of the government. And there are, I think I gave you some quotes. There are a lot of quotes. This data comes as far as his number of wives and all that comes out of just a tremendous amount of historical data, but not necessarily courthouse data.
It's interesting that after the Nuremberg, that he had these wives, and not only had many wives, but he had some that were married and men. And of course, you read Leviticus and about the priesthood. I know it's just a but it is just ironic that it doesn't connect at all with what the priesthood was.
In any sense is a good way to put it. So we hit 1830, and remember they started in New York and in Pennsylvania, had involvement in Pennsylvania, and they moved because of persecution. It's going to be their history till we get to Utah, even in Utah. We're going to see persecution chasing. Some with validity, from my perspective, some with for valid reasons. I suppose never valid to persecute, but people were upset for valid reasons in some cases. In some cases, they trumped up charges, but be that as it may. So they headed off to Kirtland, Ohio in 1831. While they were in Kirtland, they built the first temple. And the interesting thing that went along with that is they claimed to have had visions, all kinds of supernatural stuff, visions. Not visions, appearances by Jesus, Elijah, and angels and others as well.
So essentially, he's taking them back. Essentially, I guess, it looks to me like he was setting himself up to be the next Jesus Christ, but then all of a sudden he's reverted to some form of an old law because he's taken that with it. I'm just trying to figure out. I'm trying to be in his mind. Where is he going? It looked like he was trying to become the next Jesus Christ, and then all of a sudden he's going to go back to the old law where they ordained priests, and then, I know it doesn't flow,
It doesn't flow. And part of this, you said last statement was true. It's made up of a new religion, but his purpose is not. Man's dead. I can't say what his purpose is. He may be nuts, for all I know. He actually had a mental condition or something.
The 1,600 members, is that, I guess that's men, women, and children, or have any idea?
1,600 affiliates. Eventually, there were 1,600.
What's an affiliate?
Groups would form as part of this church.
So it's the numbers.
Kind of like churches.
Their members would be way over 1,600.
It'd be something over that. Yeah. I think I've got some numbers somewhere. When I get them, find them, I'll tell you.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. Hang on a minute, I'll tell you something. Maybe. Be aware this number is going to go up and down. You'll see that as we talk about this later on. I think it was, like 30,000 when they went into Utah. But when I get to it, I'll tell you. not running my notes.
They could put together quite a bit of money. That many people, I suppose.
They really did.
But by the end, it already split.
No, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't get ahead of me.
But I mean, if they're building churches and everything, they've got enough collateral or whatever to.
Yes, they buy property. In this town, that was their way, and you're going to see it cause problems in places. They did grow rapidly, as that just indicates. But they continue to have these conflicts with people. And on occasion, you see that, I think you said in notes, on occasion they were violent. And they managed, in a place called Hiram, Ohio, in 32, they managed to get Smith, and they tarred and feathered him and threatened him with death, among other things we won't talk about, but ended up, tried giving poison, for example, ended up that long and short of that was the persecution continued, it impacted his family ended up having his wife ended up having death of his twins. They lost his twins. They had another guy by the name of Sidney Rigdon. You'll hear his name later on. And I say they were death and birth. They were adopted twins. His compadre, another leader of the church, was Sidney Rigdon, and he was also attacked. So that, you know, people weren't. Unlike today, they weren't very tolerant of things, and the law did not protect these people.
Was it because of the polygamy?
In this case, I don't know specifically. In this particular case, against him, it's not clear why. There's rumors about why. But in general, about the church, there's a number of factors about the church. Polygamy would be an issue that would come up. Their financial holdings would be an issue. Their voting would be an issue. You'll see. There's a variety of reasons around why people around. Plus, it's a weird religion. I mean, yeah. You know, you think about that. These people are talking about something that sounds crazy. As John said one day, sounds nuts.
Well, attacking the
Judo-Christian,
you know, all of
them. Well, look, you all, at this point in time, Christians, in their view, were infidels. So, you know, that's the way they viewed it.
Is he still looking for stone, with stones?
No, not much translation is done. Not that I remember reading about. 35, he makes, you know, we talk about his wives, he covers it in that, polygamy, and that he was involved in it. But he practiced it secretly, and I'll give you that whole list of names down to 43-42. And the reason 42 is significant is later on he would actually claim to have a revelation. Okay, so that's the period, that's the first 7 years of the church in summary. Smith then moves off to Clay County because of all of this violence. In fact, Smith himself says he moved because of the mob violence against him and those around him. And there was an incident, I'll share with you an incident to help put a little bit of light on this. Joseph McClain, he had a vision from God that said he ought to start a bank. And that bank would ultimately be bigger than any of the banks at least in the nation. Save one, maybe. They tried to get a charter for it, and ran into problems with the charter for it. So ultimately, it became a banking company, which details are not important about that. It's a little less than a bank. Had different rules. And he called this the Kirtland Safety Society. He actually called it, and his full name was the Kirtland Safety Society Anti-Banking Company. And in the course of setting that thing up, the people in the Mormons, of course, were banked there, and that's why they set it up. And actually, part of the problem was there was a banking failures at this during the 37 time frame, I think. Kind of like a panic run on banks. And at the same time, Mormon, that bank was starting to fail. His company was failing. And at the same time, the Mormons around looked at it as he had set this thing up for his own financial benefit. So, you got all these forces working, and a bunch of Mormons, A, tried to sue him, took him to court, and B, you had Mormons that were either excommunicated for a variety of reasons, or they left of their own volition because of the things that were going on. And so they actually left Kirtland, a lot of people left Kirtland. Why I say it went up, it went down, and went over to Missouri. Okay? So that was all around this banking scandal that drove this, but people were upset, and so they were violent. And they basically, I mean, think of it as running him out of town. He left for his own safety. Went to Missouri. It was Clay County, Missouri in 38. That didn't solve the problem. It continued to be mob violence, legal difficulties, the whole bit. The Mormons themselves, many people in Missouri saw them as anti-slavery people. Of course, Missouri, when the Civil War would come along, before the Civil War, they were a slave state. And so these people were counter in terms of that belief. And they also saw the Mormons tended to vote in blocks, where everybody else in Missouri voted their conscience or whatever. So the Mormons would vote in blocks. And so they viewed them as having, going after political power. They also, we talked about churches, temple, money. They also bought a lot of land. They were buying land, Mormons. And, so that created problems. And some people even thought some of the Mormons even thought they had a divine right to particular regions and control those regions. And so that created conflict. And so there was a lot of skirmishes, fighting that went on. There was a battle called the Battle of Crooked River. And in that battle, there was a claim that came about. There was a claim that the Mormons were involved in insurrection against the government. Apparently an exaggerated claim. But it caused this caused the government to come up. The Missouri government had issued an extermination order about them. This is, remember, this is your country. Here's what they did. They issued an extermination order, which stated in part at least, the Mormons must be treated as enemies and must be exterminated or driven from the state. So they had legal sanction. The people of Missouri had legal sanction to go after the Mormons and run them out or kill them, either one. As I said, you know, it took 1976 before that actually got rescinded. Although I don't think they practiced it much, once the Civil War was over. But in the course of this, the militia attacked Mormon settlements, and so you had several Smith and several leaders were jailed because of all this. And they spent extended period of time in jail on the basis of treason. And in fact, one of my sources said that the militia, they were going to be put on trial by the military, which doesn't make sense, which is good. We don't do. Civilians are not tried in the military. Some others talked them out of it, and they ended up being in jail for a long time. Well, they had no charges. They had no evidence that they were practicing treason, so they really allowed them to escape. And so they escape, and they head off to Illinois. That's how they got to Illinois. Out of jail to Illinois. Nauvoo is a city in Illinois that they founded. Joseph would go on to be mayor of Illinois. It was a big city. second in the city, in the state at the time. And now we're into the period of time where Joe Smith publicly denies again, continues to, polygamy, in 1842. Well, supposedly in 1843 he received a revelation that polygamy was to be practiced. And the interesting thing about that is that was never added to their doctrines and covenants until 1876. So it was a secret revelation that he had. But he said, you know, when people tried to hold him to the fire, that was his comeback, or the organization's comeback, really. I gave you some quotes. These are witnesses. Orange Wright autobiography, Mary Leitner, and Helen Whitman, just to name some. These are relatives of polygamy practiced prior to 1842, in which he was practicing it secretly. And here are some testimony. Some of them, like from Helen Whitney, Sarah Ann is a Whitney, for example. Up in the first one, if you read the middle of it, Flora, that was Flora Woodward. You'll see her as one of Joseph's wives. Elizabeth, Eliza Snow, two Partridge girls, they'll all show up in that list, as will Mary Leitner. So, you know, here are people that knew what was going on. So he practiced polygamy, even though this quote man of God was saying no. So you're both face liar, and that's the bottom line of that.
How did that work? Were they his wives in just the physical sense, or did they live with him? Because it seems like he's trying to hide this. They wouldn't be able to live with him.
Remember, it's communal. They tend to be a communal group. I don't know when they went into that in this phase, but they.
I mean, it just seems like if he's going to have that many wives over that period of time, or at least 17 wives at one time or whatever, it's going to be hard to hide polygamy, or they were just serving a physical purpose like a concubine would, as opposed to...
I can't speak, I don't know. I can't answer the question.
Oh.
I may have lived with him during this period, I don't know. Remember, you're out. Mm-hmm. This is not like living in a neighborhood, mm-hmm. necessarily. This may be out on... This is considered the far west of this thing, Illinois. And so it's a different, you know, it's the front, it's not exactly the frontier, but it's not far from it.
So he's denying polygamy to the government, but his group
he's
is...
He's denying polygamy to those around him, to the non-Mormons.
Okay, that's okay. I was thinking he was denying it to his own...
He couldn't deny it to, I mean, you know, you can't keep those kind of secrets from American people. And these people right here are Mormons, and they testify. In Nauvoo, there were some disgruntled Mormons, apostate Mormons, I guess you call them, who decided to publish a paper. So here's one answer to your question, or partial answer. They decided to publish a paper to expose the polygamy that was going on. They knew about it. And Smith, being mayor of the city council, to send in the troops and shut them down. So they produced one paper and one edition, and that was it. And they were put out. And that happened in 1844. And then, because of that incident, the government came after Smith. He gets put in jail because of it. And while he's in jail, The story goes a couple of different ways. I'll give you the Mormon. I won't give you the version of it. I'll just tell you what they conclude out of all of it. Their conclusion is that, and this is out of their accounts. Joseph Smith died as an unarmed martyr. Okay. In which he went like a lamb to the slaughter, and they compared his death to that of Jesus. He sacrificed his life for the cause, as man speaking. The truth of the matter, and the truth being documentation, a lot of it, about what went on, in summary form, they were in jail, but it was sort of like house arrest. It was in the jail, but they could come out of the outside and be out of the bars, be out of the jail, behind jail bars, and be out and were actually in a room, I think on the second floor. They had guns. He and his brother, Iron, were incarcerated this way, and they had another person with them. They were smuggled guns. He smuggled his gun, and his brother was smuggled a gun. I think the other guy just had a club or something. And so they got in, the mob came for them, and they got into a gun battle. And he shot and killed a couple people. And of course, he was killed, and the brother was killed. I'm not sure about the other guy. So, it wasn't martyrdom. It wasn't some sacrifice where he was murdered by being unarmed. I mean, he was, in a sense, murdered, because they didn't have the right to charge the jail. But he was not just some poor old lamb that just stood there and said, "I'll die for my cause, shoot me," kind of thing. Okay? But that way the Mormons would be, he was a hero, a martyr, he stood the test. So just be aware of that. They hold him in high regard.
They call that one of the lies that the government has perpetrated in order to cover.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Again, these things are all documented. Mm-hmm. Not a problem finding data for these soldiers. Okay, it was also, so you have this problem in Davao, so you pull up. States and head out, and we'll see that in a minute. Then head off to Utah after this. And Utah at the time was not a state, it was part of the Mexican territory, so that's where we're going to head off, and we'll see more about that when we talk about Brigham Young. It was also during this time that he continued to have these disgruntled, either excommunicated because they didn't accept what was being taught. Polygamy, they didn't accept Joseph Smith anymore, or whatever the reason was. And they would ultimately go on to form, some of them, a reorganized Church of Christ, the Latter-day Saints. And we'll see that eventually. But as Smith was killed, now you had a vacuum of leadership. And so you start to have a little bit of the politics going on about who's going to be the leader of this organization. Smith actually had a son, Joseph Smith III, and there was some question about him being a leader. It turns out he didn't. Brigham Young would become a leader. But Joseph Smith, several years later, would become the leader of the reorganized church that was formed an offshoot of this. That's where we are right now. We're about ready to go off to Utah, which will ultimately be under Brigham Young's influence and leadership. Okay? And that picks up in the 40s. I gave you a little brief history of his early years, Brigham Young. This ends up being the second prophet. I think I mentioned to you that my opinion, Brigham Young did more to change to give the Mormon church the character it has today than anybody else has been in that position since. He made had a substantial influence on doctrine as well as organization. And their mission, and the way they viewed their mission on the earth, and all that. He got involved with the Mormon movement in the 30s, really, too. And he read Joseph's Book of Mormon for a couple of years, studied it, and was converted, and was very active. He ended up traveling through the eastern United States, making converts. Would come back in 1835. Would come back to the organization, came back to start one of the churches in Kirtland, would rise up in the leadership under, or in the organization anyway, under Smith at this point in time. And then by 1835, they formed this quorum of 12 apostles. When we talk about organization, we'll talk about where that fits in. But that made him in a pretty powerful position. With the death of Smith, you had these leaders vying, various leaders vying for a position. But what Young did is he was on this quorum of 12, and it turns out he was the senior member on the quorum of 12. So his argument, and maybe he had a revelation, quote unquote, his argument was that the person who was holding the senior position in the quorum of 12 should become the next prophet, the next leader. And he ultimately carried the day on that. And the interesting thing about that, if you look at Mormon, and I gave you a chart in here, but I don't think it makes it easy, you know. The thing that's interesting about that in relative to their organization that developed through time is, while Brigham Young was relatively young, by putting himself in the position of being the senior guy on the Quorum of 12 would become the next president, what he put in motion was a mechanism that said there would really only be old people showing up as prophets. So anytime you hear about a Mormon leader, the president prophet, dying, and a new one being appointed, it's top dog in the Quorum of 12, and more than likely he'll be in his 80s when he's put in a position, and then he rolls out when he dies. So he's in a position for life. And so that you won't see young leaders like Brigham, you won't see young and aged leaders like Brigham Young anymore if this organization continues. Okay, so that was in 1845 about, I think, that it took over. And then Young would lead this migration, and that's what we're kind of, most of us are familiar with in contemporary history, the Mormons in Utah. And that's where he would lead them. And he would lead them, I think, for about 30 years. And they would basically lay the foundation for this organization, you know, the Mormons today. Settled in Salt Lake City, you can read the kind of things that happened. Become the second prophet being the governor. Over this territory, still a territory in 1851. We're going to talk about the Adam God doctrine when we talk about polytheism with the Mormons. A little more information. But as you see, he is the one that created this Adam God doctrine. And he looked at Adam, and Adam, one being, I guess the way to describe this, ends up being everything. You know, he's Adam that we read about in the Bible. He is Michael Archangel. He ends up being the Ancient of Days. He's our Father in those years. So, and he's their God. Okay? So it's all parts. You know, we think of God the Creator and creating Adam. Well, here's the case where Adam, God, your Father, I mean, they're all the same guy. Being. And so he started teaching this, and it would take hold, and it would eventually be renounced, but it would take hold for a number of years. In 1852, there was a conference that convened in Wisconsin, all these upset LDS members, and it would lead to the formation. They split off. But they really didn't get organized for another 7 or 8 years. And they organized and reorganized the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That still exists today under, I think it's Community of Christ, that's the name of it now. In 1856, he comes upon, he built on this belief around blood atonement. And he's the guy that really made it, carried the day with it. And it's a, it's an interesting, not interesting, that's part of the bad word choice. extremes. Blasphemy, contrary to anything you read in the Bible. And it was self-sacrifice. Christ's blood is insufficient to sacrifice for certain sins, one of which is being in the Mormon Church, by the way. And the only way you can atone is by self-atonement, i.e., kill yourself. It's really interesting. I would always find it kind of interesting doctrine when it comes to leaving the Mormon Church. I left the Mormon Church. To get back into the Mormon Church, I have to, absolved of my sin, I have to kill myself. Well, obviously, that won't get me back in the Mormon Church because I'm dead. But that was the doctrine. And Christ's blood was insufficient, according to the doctrine. And so you had, for a variety of reasons, there was all these reasons now. That, remember, the West is moving. The country is moving west. So they escaped Illinois, went to Utah, and set up their communities and all that. But the outsiders that were there, plus outsiders from Mormonism, plus people that are moving to the west, now are heading back into the conflict stage. And you actually have, you all probably heard about this. Read about it from time to time. In the 50s, 57, there was a plan to replace Young as his governor. And there was in the course of that, there was a massacre that was held. Young sent off troops to murder a wagon and train of non-Mormons. And they accomplished that. And led to what's referred to as the Mountain Meadows Massacre, which, I mean, you read about that in just history books, at least you did when I was in school. And they ultimately executed the fellow that did that. John Lee was the guy that Young sent to do it. Young escaped, by the way, any kind of punishment for that. At the time of his death, you see the data, Young had 17 wives and 56 children. And although it was stopped being a practice in time, to this day we see it still practiced by spinoffs. Okay, 1896, you've got federal laws coming into being, Edmunds Act. These are dealing with polygamy. And then the Edmunds Tucker Act, which actually did away with the Church of Latter-day Saints. And the Supreme Court upheld it, so they started seizing property. Now, I'm not sure, I didn't think it was important, I'm not sure how they went from the government seizing the property to ultimately giving it back, which they did give it back. And what would happen in 1890, and this probably was come out of the compromise, the president said that the president of Mormon, Wilbur, would issue this manifesto telling to obey the laws of the land. And so when that happened, then by 1896 they could be a kind of state. So the whole issue, truth be told, the reason what the Mormons do not practice polygamy today in full force is because of the situation, an untenable situation they have with the country, the government, taking their property, invalidating their religion. They would be continually at their necks. So the way out of that was to have a revelation that, lo and behold, we really need to stop practicing polygamy, and several years later they would become a state. And of course, becoming a state had all kinds of benefits. Not practicing polygamy had benefits in the eyes of the state and the people around them. So that helped ease some of the problems they were having with their neighbors. They had, and y'all have lived through this. Everybody in here was alive in 1978. They had this issue with, some of you weren't here live in 1978. I don't do my math very well. But anyway, remember they were an anti-slavery group. Well, they would change to having a view of blacks as being inferior, which, you know, would lead to slavery being God's way. And they were practicing that, or teaching that, practicing it as they could. They couldn't practice slavery because it was outlawed after 1860s. But they continued to practice it and kept the blacks out of the priesthood. Remember, you can be a Mormon, they could be a Mormon, but they couldn't be in the priesthood. Well, that didn't very much good. So they wanted to reach out to the blacks. Well, it really didn't have anything to do with reaching out to the blacks because of civil rights and the government's pressure on them. They eventually had a revelation that it was okay for blacks to obtain the privilege of the priesthood. Okay? So that was 1978. Right now, recent time, what's happened is the transition's been going on. I mentioned this in the early slides. Transition's been going on that basically the Mormons want to be considered Christians. They're trying to be, made a lot of effort, including spending a lot of money, to move into mainstream Christianity, like the better word. It has all kinds of benefits. I look at a lot of people who no longer look at Mormons as nuts in the doctrines. It's nuts. I mean, they kind of fit in. Good family values. I mean, all those things go along with it. And they even went so far as to say, we don't want to be known as this, we want to be known as that. And I gave you some comments about that out of the news. If you look at the statistics, oh, by the way, they wanted to change everybody not to call them this, but they call them that anyway. If you look at the statistics they gave you down at the bottom, net worth holding from the billions of dollars, $2 million a day in revenue, and that's been 15, 20 years ago. So 15 years ago. It's a big business with Mormon churches. I don't have time to read this. I'm going to start off our next class, Lord willing, just with something I got out of their official documents called What Mormons Believe About Jesus Christ. And I think you'll find that interesting to listen to. It's a few bullet items to give you a sense of how they're going to project themselves. And how that language we talked about, those definitions we talked about, are sort of convenient. Okay, we'll cover study organization. We'll do organization on Wednesday. And yeah, okay. Thank you. Oh, Buzz.